Welcome to the Everyday Bow Hunter. I'm your host, Mike Manley, retired Green Beret turned bow hunter, joined by my brother, Dan Zimmer. We're here to share tips, stories, and talk gear, all from our unique points of view. Whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned bow hunter, I think you're going to like it. So let's go. All right. Hey. Welcome to episode 11 of the Everyday Bow Hunter podcast. I'm here with Dan, of course, and this week we have Andy Musser on. If you remember back at episode 5, we had a good talk with Andy about his journey and how he's gotten into bow hunting and how he's fought cancer and won and is still kicking ass. So at that time, we discussed that we're going to come up to his camp and kind of do our own little deer tour thing here the last week in October. Did hunting here today. We're going to hunt tomorrow here, and then we're going to go up to our camp and complete things out and hunt Friday night and Saturday, so should have a good time. Yes. We'll talk a little bit about why we didn't have podcasts last week. We kind of had some issues. If you remember me talking in episode 10, a buddy of mine passed away. I ended up going to Washington State for a funeral, so that put us behind. And then Dan?
All right, kidney stones.
Badly, he loves.
Yeah,
he loves fruit punch pee.
Yeah, it kind of came out looking like red Kool-Aid. Past three stones was not very pleasant. I was in the woods a day and a half later. It was not pleasant. Yeah, we'll go from there. It was not a successful journey for me, but yeah,
I had some good hunting last week, but we'll talk about that later in the episode here. But the to start things off, we always, before we get into what we've done since we got here, we always do a listener question. And listener question I got was specific to Osseo Gear. If you're not familiar with Osseo Gear, I've done a lot of testing on their hunting apparel. It's bow hunting gear for bow hunters, and they have the Raptor camo that's kind of modeled after an owl. But anyway, the question I got was that the individual said, "Hey, I'm looking to decide on if I'm going to buy the Osseo late season stuff, or if I'm going to get their like kind of late mid season stuff, was their Sherpa line jacket, Sherpa line pants, and that stuff's kind of like in the same line as Sika Stratus and that kind of windproof type stuff. It gives you a lot of head protection." And this individual's from Pennsylvania, sorry, I can't remember your name right now since we're up at camp here, but we talk a little bit about the fact that if you want something that you can, that's really, you know, in my opinion, that you can use, you know, get a lot more use out of, it doesn't always get super cold in the beginning of November.
Right.
You know, it might get down to 20 sometimes. We had, days it was down to 27
degrees. I mean, you look at today, we're all but at the last of October here, and it was 78 degrees this afternoon.
46 in the morning.
46 in the morning, but yeah. This afternoon got a little buggy.
Yeah,
a little hot.
Yep, wearing our early season gear.
I was definitely wearing early season gear.
Easy recommendation is to get that kind of later mid-season gear. Get the windproof stuff to kind of get shed that wind off. You get the DWR, that water repellency on. You get it's not quite a rain jacket, but it sheds that stuff for you. Keep you a little warm. I really like the Osseo mid-season stuff, the Sherpa line jacket, Sherpa line pants. They do have bibs too. I don't have those, but I got the Sika stuff to test. I actually haven't even worn it yet, but you've worn it quite a bit.
Yeah, I have. I've been wearing Sika for a few years now, but I would say, just to mimic what Mike said, is rarely do you get into any late season gear in Pennsylvania here. I had the Fanatic system, which is going to be their late season system, and it is just, I mean, unless it's in the 20s or 30s and really windy, there's really no need for it. Yeah. I live and breathe out of the Stratus system for the most part in Pennsylvania, and that's pretty much from now until easily into gun season.
And that doesn't mean you're not going to layer under it. You know,
right.
Get good base layers and layer under it.
Many options for underneath. And I was even saying to the guys last night that I think what the ultimate setup would actually be getting one of the battery-powered base layers underneath. So that you can stay super, even in the cold conditions. That way you can stay really slim, not as bulky, but still have that windproof layer.
My always question is that stuff is it have any kind of odor to it?
No,
I don't know.
No, I mean I've never noticed the odor, but deer obviously has a different nose than us. But
yeah,
the key is,
I mean, I definitely do that because it's not that expensive either.
No, but I mean you would definitely need four batteries for
you
sure.
You said that was through NUMA?
Yeah.
That's power bank stuff?
Yeah. I mean, you could almost get any. There's multiple brands out there, but NUMA is probably one of the better ones.
Yeah.
And it's literally a polyester base layer.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a top and a bottom.
I know.
It's all controlled by battery.
You know, the number one thing is when you are bow hunting is to stay slim.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
You want the mobility.
Yeah. You don't want the bulk, and that's why I talked to you about. Yeah. Like, is that Fanatic vest,
mm-hmm.
you know, worthwhile? That way, I could have like maybe the Stratus on.
Yeah.
Fanatic and
stuff. Don't get me wrong. Even if you got to throw on the Fanatic, it's designed for bow hunting. I mean, it's super quiet. It's a little bulkier than the Stratus, but you could easily pull
it
back.
Pretty salty too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it'll set you back, but I'll tell you what.
It'll
keep you out there.
You had that Fanatic hoodie out here yesterday. That was mm-hmm. pretty nice.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how nice
that was. Yeah, which that is, that could be something you wear from early season the whole way through to late season.
It's essentially
a heavy base layer.
Yeah.
I was pretty impressed with it, too.
Yeah,
so it's nice. You can just use that for the mask and stuff.
Oh, see, it's like I was saying last night, it's my most used piece of camo that I do wear is the Fanatic.
So what are you going to say, Dan?
Oh, a guy from work uses the Milwaukee brand battery operated, just little batteries. He says, just take two with you, and it's that quick and easy, just to pop in, pop out. And of course, he has the whole line of Milwaukee stuff, so being able to utilize all that. But yeah, just the little cell that it comes with, the actual battery, he says it's so nice, light, easy to use, just clips right into your pocket.
Yeah,
so you're actually making minimal movement if you need to like change out a battery, because it's real quick and easy. I've never seen the NUMA stuff. I've only seen the Milwaukee stuff. Mm-hmm. I would personally probably rather go with a hunting line mm-hmm. versus a construction line.
Yeah.
But, because
mobility.
Mobility and what it's geared for.
The great thing is, too,
the zones.
Just thinking about it with it is you could, just thinking off the top of my head, you can walk in without any of that turned on.
Right.
Then when you're in the stand, you fire it up, and you're not sweated out and stuff.
Yeah, it's one of the things is when you need it.
Yeah,
like
turn it on.
This evening would have been a perfect example of that. It was hot all day. That last hour, the 11th hour, we call it, the magic hour.
Yep.
It really cooled off.
Yeah.
Right there would have been nice. Just
I was perfect. Boop,
I was dressed in my early season stuff. I was practically out there naked.
I wore my mid-weight stuff out.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to sweat a little bit, but I was thinking about the last little bit there, and it worked out for me. I hope that answers the question. It's really, there's a lot of personal preference in there. You know, it really is a lot of personal preference, but I don't recommend going out and buying, if you get those two things together, that late season kit, that's unless you're really, really hunting all day.
You're in Minnesota. Cold, you're in Michigan.
You're really in northern states that have that severe, severe cold weather. You know, that's $739 with the two pieces right there.
Yeah.
And the Fanatic and stuff, with the bibs and the jacket, that's a hell of a long time, too.
Yeah, a little more.
I'd like to say the more I get my hands on the stuff that you have from Ozio, I'm more and more impressed every time I touch the stuff. I love that Raptor camo pattern. Love it. It, like, for me, hunting off the ground, it's almost perfect because it kind of, in a way, mimics tree bark, but you know what I mean?
I showed him a picture of I had taken my jacket.
Oh, yeah. The backpack.
I wanted to go up and hike and scout out the place where I saw that deer go last week. I had a buck come by me and I wanted to see where he went, a couple hours later. And I didn't want to carry my stuff up this really steep hill. So I basically, cached it and put my Ozio jacket over top of it. And then when I got away from it, I went up and did that scouting. I came back. And when I came back, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You almost couldn't see it.
It was so camouflaged.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Next to a tree. I was like, wow.
It's doing its job.
Really,
yeah.
That's really nice. So anyway, this stuff's really good. But we had a great time, come up here with Andy. It would be nice if you actually had heat in here. We have to wear jackets.
Camp Freedom.
Yeah. Freedom Camp.
Generators running in the background, power and everything. This is what you call rugged camp, man.
Off the grid.
It's nice. I like
it. We did a morning hunt, and we get back, and he says, hey, do you want me to make you some breakfast? And we're like, yeah. So he fires up the Coleman grill over there, propane bottle on it, and he's cooking potatoes and whatever. We sit down and start eating. Next thing you know, there's a freaking bat flying around. we were like a bunch of like fifth grade schoolgirls, and we were scattering.
They were.
And he had to sack up and take the thing out. But it was comical. I mean, that's camp life. That's
took this big heavy wrench off the one I said, that's not going to work. I'll probably destroy your light up there going after the bat. Yeah, that worked out. That was hilarious. If that was trying to crawl up into the ceiling.
Yeah, it was pretty creepy.
It's funny.
So as far as the morning hunt.
Andy took me out. You know, it's how many acres do you have here?
64.
64 acres. That's pretty nice. And so went out. You dropped me off at a spot.
Yeah.
Little transition there. Mm-hmm. Transition line. It's kind of on a knob there.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a little point. And there's low ground around it. And trails coming out. In fact, when I walked out, we saw that there was a nice scrape there and stuff. Mm-hmm. So not a bad location. Didn't see anything this morning, but that's bow hunting.
Yeah.
And you end up going.
Well, yeah, it wasn't too long.
What happened when you walked?
Wasn't too long after I dropped you off. I cut down the I guess it'd be the west side of the hill down into the bedding, and I didn't get more than I don't know a quarter of the way there, and I heard blowing. Something was blowing.
Oh, geez.
So they were either coming up and out, or they had just heard me enough, and they were just boom out. So right then and there, I just stood still, and I just kind of creeped my way down until it got a little more light, and then I was able to glass.
That wind would have been blown away from you.
Right.
They had to hear me.
They heard me. Yeah, it definitely was one of those situations.
It was pretty neat to see how this morning my spot was the most eastern side of the property. And I was the first one of the three of us to get sunlight. And I was dropping milkweed through this process. When the actual sun came up over the mountain and it hit me right in the face, I started hitting it. It was amazing to watch my thermals just change like that. It was to see that happen. It was pretty cool. It was like the science is working. You know,
I was saying to him, my thermals dropped there where I was hunting tonight. Yeah, they were dropping down the hillside.
Well, mine went from downhill tonight to uphill, like up towards that field.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's because normally, you know, your morning thermals rise and your evening thermals drop.
But the wind changed.
Ah,
so
good point. That wind there.
Yeah.
And it was a really light wind tonight. It was just kind of.
Yeah. At times it was. Going,
but you could hear it coming.
I think
it was just like dead quiet air.
Maybe 2 to 3 miles an hour, and then maybe gusting up.
Maybe
8 or something.
Just enough to mask anything that was moving. So you really had to keep your head on a swivel. Well, that's where I was at.
Obviously, with my deaf ass, I had hear coming into me. David, now
yeah. So there we go. Back up and went to some local state game or state forest land around here and. We all kind of, Andy showed us different spots on Onyx and was like, all right, pick your poison pretty much. And
yeah, we did some e-scouting.
Yes. And I kind of asked, I was like, me hunting off the ground, what do you propose? And he set me in a pretty good spot. I mean, when I got in there, I realized this is very vast in here and a lot of transitions and hills all converging into one spot with a field of agricultural field. Up behind me,
which was private land,
right on the border.
So I was struggling to find a spot with me hunting off the ground because it was so open in there, hardwoods, that I finally got myself to the edge of like a ravine kind or hollow, whatever, a draw and comes down meets. I got myself to the edge of it behind a big tree and I was hunting that spot and I was like, I'm really not in the right spot. It's just too open. No matter what happens here, I'm going to get busted. So then an hour at the magic hour, Andy texts me and says, oh, FYI, the last time I hunted this spot, I got a doe, and they actually came from this opposite direction, and he showed me old X, and with the little red arrow showed me which way they came. Well, I was like, well, I'm facing the wrong way. I stood up, turned around, and I was like, well, I'm just going to stand. It's the last hour. Start peeking on the other side of the tree, and I look to my right, and here comes a nice 8-point. And he's feeding along the, walking along the edge of the field. And I grunted him. He really wanted anything to do with that. And then I snort wheezed him, and I had him hooked like a fish just instantly. His head went to the ground, and he came right down to me. Got to 40 yards. I shot, and my arrow hit a little twig and deflected, and I missed him. And he walked back up, and I was
He didn't run off.
He didn't run off. He actually, his tail never went up. He never flagged. He didn't even know what happened. I mean, to him, it could have been just
a twig or something. He was
very not... He knew something was going on because he went up, and he turned around and he looked at me. Down my way, I should say. Well, at that point, I reloaded, got set back up, and threw a grunt, and he came right back down. And this time, he was a little bit farther away, and I missed him again. And I'm pretty disappointed in myself because I don't normally miss. I pride myself in being a pretty damn good shot. But today was not my day, but it was a really good experience, and it was very textbook. Grunt him in, or I should say actually snort wheezing him in, but then grunting him back to me, grunting him to get him to stop where I wanted him for my shot placement. It was all very textbook. It was a great experience, and I'm a little disappointed in myself, but this is hunting, and this is part of it. You're going to win, and you're going to lose. And the days that you lose, you have to suck it up. You have to own it and learn from your mistakes.
It happens. Those twigs out there and stuff, you saw your arrow deflect, right?
Yes, I did. So the biggest thing is I did not hit him and I did not wound him. And then we don't have a wounded animal out there, which that with us leaving after tomorrow morning's hunt would not leave me time to go follow up with that. We would have to stay. You know, I would not be able to sleep very well tonight. You know that I respect these animals way too much. But
so, Andy, you've hunted down here in the state park, public land, archery only areas.
Right? Yeah,
that's what they are, archery only areas.
Yeah,
and you basically, you helped us out and just basically guiding us into a general area.
Yeah,
and so what made you go to where you went today?
Originally the first time I scouted that area was the first thing that came up on Onyx Hunt was that private that we set him up at today. And
with the field there,
I saw that field and I had driven on the opposite side of that field on the road and shined in there at night. Man, I saw 100 eyes lit up. So I knew the deer flocked to that area, and I just figured, heck, this might be a good area. So that was 3 years ago. I went back there and I scouted on a Sunday. And I scared about 15 doe, what I thought were doe, out of that area on a Sunday. And I said, hey, next time there's a south wind, I'm going to come in here.
Oh, yeah.
And so it all worked out. I mean, I came in on the south wind, and boom, they came up and out. And it was like textbook. I got a really nice doe. And, in and out. It was textbook.
That was so critical tonight. That was the wind. Mm. It was a south wind. He texted me.
Yeah.
No joke.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there like, thinking this all these hours out there, I'm sitting the wrong way. This just ain't working.
Yeah.
And then he texts me this critical little bit of information, and it changed everything. I literally turn around, stand up, and it all happened. Timely. It was perfect.
Yeah. I'm sitting there in my saddle, and I'm just like thinking, like, well, I didn't actually really tell him what direction to probably look.
Yeah.
I just said, just go here and you'll be fine. Figure it out, because they come up, they come from this
direction. I'd seen a bunch of scrapes heading up in there.
Oh, yeah.
Through that draw there, I was like, wow, that was very promising.
I only saw a scrape when I walked out.
Yeah.
It was right down from where I was at.
So. Yeah.
But I didn't see, I saw two little rubs, and that was it.
Yeah. Last year when the Harry B and you went then, so we dropped him off at this spot. I knew historically it was good. But I had two cameras that were just soaking up there on the mountain, and I hadn't been there since August. So I said I knew of two decent areas. And last year when I was up here, I was heading up the mountain and I saw a massive buck, probably one of the biggest deer I've ever seen in Pennsylvania. And I knew from that point on, I was like, man, I got to put some cameras out here. I got to find this sucker.
That would make you do it.
He was a beast. Yeah. And, you know, it's a mile from my camp. So it was a no-brainer just to scout that area. And so pretty much the areas that I've been scouting in the past year were the areas that me and Mike went to tonight and this afternoon's hunt. I mean, my hunt was very uneventful. I had nothing. But, Mike, you saw a little bit of action there at the end of the night.
The first thing I looked at was, I was looking there, that drainage that came down, the draw that was there. You know, when you see that high ground that goes around there, it just screams buck bedding to me.
Yeah.
You know, when you see that kind of layout, and they're going to be hugging those ridge lines around there, and actually, look at what happened to me tonight.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened, is they come out of bedding in that same, you know, scenario where they're hugging that ridge. I'm thinking he couldn't have been that far.
Yeah.
Bedded that far.
Yeah.
But anyway, I went in, and the wind was kind of bad at first. So I get up on little knob bear, right from where you went in. You went up to the left in that little walking hiking trail or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just kind of jumped up on the knob there off the main trail.
Yeah.
And got up in there, and I got up on the knob, and I had the drainage down on the other side, and I kind of stopped, and I started dropping milkweed, and it was all going the direction I was walking.
Yeah.
I was like, son of a bitch, I can't freaking go. I can't do this. Mm-hmm. So I got over the edge, and it changed a little bit, and it wasn't as bad. And I said, I'm going to get down in here, and maybe if I'm lower in here, it won't be
right.
as bad.
Right. You know?
So I got down in the low ground, and there was a ton of area there that was just, I mean, the trails down there, there's tons of trails. You said you were down there before.
Yeah.
There's tons of trails through there, and I saw two real little, you know, rubs that didn't really get me excited. I was like thinking it was like a young deer that made them because they weren't really, you know, hit hard or anything.
Yeah.
But they were to have a lot of those trees in there that
they like.
You know what I mean?
They're mostly big, sparse.
Yeah. But I've seen them hit small pines and stuff before, but they hadn't doing
via text message. I was watching because I got set up. I was the first one off.
Yeah.
And where I had got from where I parked to where the spot was is not very far.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there watching you guys text back and forth, and it seemed like you guys were struggling to see sign.
Well,
we were doing is exactly, both of us were doing.
You were scouting.
We talk about all the time is active scouting, doing that still hunting kind of deal where you're looking for the hot sign to set up on.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to set up on. Just go in and sit in a spot and hope that a deer comes along. You need to have the sign to support it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're just throwing a dart.
So I was watching the text messages, and I was thinking, well, if this keeps going on, these guys are going back to camp, and they're going to start drinking beer. He's already drank all of my beers. Now I've got to stop and get more beer on the way to my camp. But,
that's right.
But no.
If you see, the Dogfish Head beer is that he's holding, is that your beer, Andy?
No, that is... this is my camp.
I like how you did that. You give me
the beer, you can say I'm my camp.
That's good. I like that.
And you know, Andy, I would love to extend another, you know, we are so grateful and thankful, and we are very appreciative of
absolutely.
You turn us on some meat territory out there.
Yeah,
get to hunt your 64 acres. We get to go do that again tomorrow morning. We're going to do a morning hunt. As soon as that morning hunt's over, we're going to come back, clean up, shop, pack up, and we're heading to Juniata County.
Yeah.
And we're going to go hunt our cabin in our area. So,
but back to what I was doing.
Oh,
so, I know you forgot. But anyway, I'm going kind of up the ridge line, and I hit a pretty good trail.
Yeah.
And I'm following it. I'm looking for crossing trails to see if maybe it's going somewhere, and maybe there's some sign or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I get probably three quarters of the way up the ridge, and I'm kind of dejected. And that's what the text messages are coming from.
Yeah.
And I never actually found anything that said made me say, oh, this is great. I basically used the terrain.
Yeah.
I used the terrain and said, hey, this is where I'd expect buck bedding to be. There's the point out in front of me, and then there's a knob up ahead of me, up above me. I'm like, they could be bedding up above there or out on the point. Yeah. Right. So that's what I assumed. I hit some really big FFDS, fairly fresh deer shit. Big,
clumpy.
Clumpy chunks of it.
With flies on it. So yes, it was fresh.
Fresh, very fresh. So anyway, I saw that and I went up, and then I hit a really good crossing trail there. And the trail really got really defined going straight up that knob there. So that's good for you to know in the future. And I set up in the only oak tree there that had, and I hadn't seen acorns the whole way up that ridge. Yeah.
Which is wild because it's just
everywhere. And that was the only place, and I got an oak tree up there that had acorns around it. I actually saw a cherry tree with some cherries falling off it down at the very bottom.
Nice.
I forgot to tell you that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I get up in the tree. The whole evening goes by, and I'm probably 15 minutes to dark. I was telling these guys, I'm hearing this clicking. And it just, I'm thinking, because I wear hearing aids, I'm deaf, you know, and I got my my mask on and stuff, and I'm thinking it's my ear rubbing against
that,
going clicking. I'm turning around. I have leaves on. I have a branch kind of behind me with leaves on it and stuff. And I'm like, I don't know what this is, but I had just done a calling sequence where I told you I did. Yeah. I did snort wheezes. I grunted, and then I took that branch and I shook it.
Yeah.
I shook it and did kind of like that. You know, kind of sequenced like they were actually getting their horns in it, and then I did another grunt, and that was it. And then I said, you know, it's like maybe 10 minutes later I hear that clicking shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the heck is this clicking stuff? I turned around, I looked all around me, and I looked down. I did not see a thing, but it was kind of thick behind me though. You know how thick it is down there.
Yeah.
And boom, now it's getting to where it's hard to see, and you know, getting past legal shooting light where I can't identify anything. If anything would come in there, I wouldn't have been able to identify it as far as horns are concerned, if it was legal or whatever.
Yeah, of course.
Unless it was massive. Mm-hmm. Now, but so I
you picked up one of it. They're not horns, they're antlers.
Yes, whatever. Shut up. Anyway, so I go to start tearing down to get out of the tree, and right underneath me, back behind me, had to have been there forever.
Yeah.
Moving in, and that was obviously the clicking sounds that I heard.
Yeah.
Deer were coming in, probably feeding or something or whatever, on browse or whatever it was doing.
Yeah.
And boom, took off, and I was pretty dejected by that, but it's not like I couldn't even identify it. All I saw was the tail going, and that was it.
Yeah.
And then, so I continue to tear down. I'm down. I got two sticks left to tear off the tree. And then down the point where I expected something to come, all of a sudden I have a deer coming. I just had my red light on my headlamp. So I just stopped. And I didn't move. And it came down, and it went down the trail that down the mountain where I expected to happen in the first place. Of course, it's doing it after dark. All that tells me for you in the future hunting up here, since you're up here more than we are.
Right.
Is to bank that information and say, hey, I have two potential bedding areas based on that information.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting these guys to get a deer tonight. I just wanted them to spread out and give me some scouting information. and get me some free beer.
The truth comes out.
I love it. Well, I mean, the lessons learned are, you know, it's just part of the process, though. You know, you get that information and you say, okay, now the next time I go in there, I need to put myself in a better position to get closer to that bedding.
Yeah.
You know, because I spooked that deer, but one, he didn't smell me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because he was spooked by my movement, not by smell or whatever.
Right.
We talked about the wind, how it was. The thermals there had dropped and were dropping kind of away from where he come.
Yeah.
So he was completely, you know, what am I saying? Yeah, upwind or whatever. So he was not catching my wind at all, not catching my scent.
Yeah.
So it didn't hurt me. That thermals had actually helped the way they were dropping there.
Yeah.
It really, you know.
I know the exact area where you were at. I had a camera set up right on that heavy ass trail going up and down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It's you know, and the thing is, like I said, there wasn't a tremendous amount of sign, but the traffic, the foot traffic stuff was there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's one of them areas, and like next week or 2 weeks, it's going to be, I mean, there's going to be deer all over that.
I think
then it's going to be no rhyme or reason to it. That's just going to be how it is.
I think we're in the early onset of rut. I mean,
pretty rut.
That free rut here, the buck that I missed tonight,
he was looking to fight.
He did not react very well to the grunt, but he reacted to the snore wheeze. It triggered him. He just kind of went, and that was pretty cool.
And I think, like you said, it's about timing. That snore wheeze right now is pretty good.
Yeah, because they're clashing now. You know, they. I don't think it's a little early for the estrus to come out. But But they're gearing up. But they're getting territorial. Yeah. And it's time to.
The does might not be ready, but the
they're drawing the line.
The fellows are.
They're drawing the line.
Right now. This week, a lot of people call this scrape week. And I was looking for a scrape to come. Yeah. As if I found an active scrape that's tore up, I was going to hunt over it.
Yep.
But you can't hunt over something you don't find. And you said you had some scrapes there where you are. Were they tore up?
They were fresh. One of them was still moist. The rest of them were clear. No leaves in them, mm-hmm. but they're kind of dry.
Most of the times I saw here, too, were dry.
Dry.
But they were significant.
Yeah.
You want to find the ones right now that are that, like the wider ones, mm-hmm. a little bit wider. Obviously fresh.
Yeah.
There's ones that, I think it was, I was listening to something, one podcast talking about it. It said, if you want the best scrape, and they're hard to find, they're not the easiest scrapes to find, but you find a scrape where it's been used year over year.
Oh, yeah.
And the branch on it looks like no deer would even want to touch it because it's been worked so hard. It's just... just wore out. But it's strong enough to continue to maintain
a
historical scrape spot. So
that community scrape or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, and they actually said something too about if you get up to like a tree that has multiple branches hanging off and you have like three scrapes around that tree, sometimes it's a young buck that's going nuts and just continually scraping. But they're usually doing a scrape line versus around one tree. When you have it around one tree, it could be three different bucks that are
or
showing dominance in that area and communicating that. Mm. So I think that's kind of
real quick
important stuff to know.
A lot of the leaves are down on the forest floor right now, and
I can't believe how much has changed in the last.
I know, but what I noticed with those scrapes is, yes, they were dry. But I think they were still being checked because you could see that they were turned over. You know what I'm saying? And the hoof prints, the dirt that was left behind was moister. You know what I mean? Mm. So I could tell that they're still being traveled.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're being used. I don't know how that
really works. Well, the one thing that I think that people get tripped up on a lot is because they look at the ground for it. And... year-round scrapes, they're not pulling the dirt.
Yeah, they're
up. It's all about orbital. Rubbing that preorbital gland on the
branch. You gotta look at the branch.
The branch
tells you a lot too, like the thickness of it too, and also you can also tell. I mean, heck, most branches you're gonna find are like your pinky.
Yeah,
and they're just a little snapped over, no big deal. But when you see one that's like two fingers broken over. That's a significant buck. And that's a scrape you probably want to.
That's kind of like what we're talking about, too.
Or hunt by it.
Right.
He's going to be traveling.
Especially this time of year, too. Yeah. It's a scrape line. The scrapes are.
Yeah. And it's not going to be. It's not going to be too long here. We get into next week where the scrapes are going to start drying up.
Maybe
getting into rut.
Yeah.
And they're going to. All of a sudden, you're going to be like, I'm going to go on a scrape. And all the scrapes you go to are just completely dried out.
Yeah. You just gotta
look for the does that are running around with their tongues hanging out.
Yeah.
Because they're being run by a buck.
Yeah.
But I think
the next podcast we ought to talk a little bit about that, about the rut stuff we learned and talk a little bit about that.
I mean, we always do a little bit of a lessons learned type thing, and 17 years in here archery hunting, be humble. Some days you eat the bear, other days the bear eats you. I got eaten pretty good today, and I'm licking my wounds, but you got to be humble because this sport will humble you. You can't win every single time. That's why the everyday boat hunter. It just we're the average guy going out trying to make it happen, and I lost a pretty good battle today.
And that's a big thing for beginners to know. You know, if you're a beginner, you're hunting, you know, don't get discouraged by that, because these things happen in bow hunting. You're hunting bow hunting, you know, you can have the best arrows in the world, the best broadheads and everything, and Mother Nature and that deer have a vote. You hit some kind of twig or something and sent your arrow flying different direction twice, you know. That happened to...
The second one was a little rushed, and I didn't take my time.
That happened to Dad.
That's where I'm really beating myself up about.
Yeah. That happened to Dad, where he was up there at a place we call Fern, I think.
Not old man. That's a little insider.
He is an old man. But
you're going to call me Dad. inside joke park.
He didn't like me calling him old man, so I got
on the podcast. Yeah. He's like, so, well somebody noticed that I call him Dad, but he calls him old man, and he wants to know why. But
anyway, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, it is. So tomorrow we do a morning hunt. We pack up, we leave, head to our place, and we hunt Friday evening and Saturday, and then head home.
Yeah. That'll end the old deer tour here.
Yeah.
First annual.
Yeah.
I have some places that have shown me to have some really hot sign, and I'm going to try to hop back in there and go after it.
I know where I want to be next year.
Yeah, that's right. I know where I'm going to be next week, actually. Well,
cheers, boys.
Thanks to this guy. Thanks to these two.
Here, cheers with your free beer.
Yeah. First annual.
Hey. Well, thanks, everyone. This is episode 11. We appreciate everything you do for us. Really want more listener questions. Send them in. Thank you very much for being a listener. And Dan?
Hey, hit that like button. Subscribe. We really appreciate you. Thank you so much. We're sorry about not having a podcast last week. We'll try and get back on track here. Thank you very much.
Yep, and we'll see you next time.